Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 16th, 1998. In the fireside room this afternoon is Janet Grant and Frank Rogers. Today's session number is FO98-4 and is titled Practicing Discernment. Let's listen in.
My name is Janet Grant and I serve Holden Village as one of its directors. And today I serve you as someone who will hopefully lead a conversation around discernment. And my hope today is that we can just share some a little bit about the practice of discernment and how it's been used in this place at Holden Village, some things we have tried, some of the things that work and some that don't. I'd like also for us to take a little bit of time to reflect on how we might make use of this particular chapter and this particular book, if there are ways that you think you might be able to use it. And also I'd like for us to practice a little bit. This is about practicing our faith. So I hope that we will have a little practice in the next several minutes together. I'm surprised it's such a large group. I'm used to a smaller winter community, but this is great. For starters, what I'd like for us to do, part of the practice of Holden Village is meeting and getting to know one another. So I'd like you just to turn to the people near you and introduce yourself if you don't know the person near you, or find someone near you and tell them something about yourself. So you can catch up with each other later, I hope. From the book of Isaiah. Listen to me, O coastlands. Pay attention, you peoples from afar. The Lord called me before I was born. While I was in my mother's womb, the Lord named me. As part of our practice today, I invite you into a time of silence. We'll take several minutes to be here together quietly and enter into the silence to listen, pay attention. And if there's a noise outside that's disturbing you, just let it drive on by. Let it sift by so that it's not no longer an intrusion, but just merely a part of the life here. And let the thoughts come into your mind that come there, making yourself open to what the Holy Spirit might bring through these windows and through the breeze into our hearts. And in a few minutes, I'll close our time with a brief prayer. So open yourself now to the silence. Gracious God, we thank you for your presence with us. We ask that we might find ways to do your will in our lives, to share our gifts, to know the meaning of our lives. Bring us openness that your Spirit might work through us. We ask your presence with us here and now, that your will might be done through us. In your name we pray. Amen. Does anyone have any reflection on how the Holy Spirit might have just come into your presence in those moments? Any reflections? That I was aware of the breeze around us. Even though the windows and doors aren't open, I was aware of it outside through hearing it. and aware of God's presence in that way. Aware of my nervousness and my desire to, my yearning to share about something I feel deeply about. This place. I was very aware of my breathing after I was just really calm, and it seemed like that's about all I could notice was my breathing. Mm-hmm. A great symbol and understanding of spirit and breath and life through us. Air.
I was aware of thoughts coming and going. And returning to my breathing, thoughts came. But feeling a little bit scattered.
Aware of how easy it is to fill up our lives with activity and not take that time for total introverted, quiet reflection, silence, and how good that feels to be in touch with that and be doing that, and how little time we do that compared to, I should say, I do that compared to filling my life up with so many other things.
Mm-hmm. What hour is this since breakfast when we got up? Anybody aware of how many hours that we've had already?
Depends on when you got up.
Well, I was thinking of Dorothy's article on the Sabbath. And a long time ago when I was here, I was interested by the seventh, and I did a study, you know, that the seventh hour, you know, you all take these rest breaks, seventh hour of the day is important. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was wondering, are we past the seventh hour of rest? Because I try to do that in my life, but I don't always do it, you know, but it's necessary that we have that moment of quiet, do something other than what we're used to do, busy. You know, either sit down and read or go out and look at the flowers or something. It's sort of a sabbatical time.
Every day.
The day. Plus all the years and the Sunday Sabbath and, you know, all goes into that same picture. But just daily, like this, that hour, the seventh hour, is important.
Holden Village is about change. I've lived here now 7 different years. 4 most recently and 3 previously. And it has been about change all those years, and it has been much longer ago before that. I think about change in this place as the valley. The valley has changed over thousands and thousands of years because of glaciers that come through this. Came through this valley. I think about the seasons, that as I live here year round, I yearn for the changes of the seasons. I love it now that we're moving into the summer season. I like the change, but by September I'm going to be ready for the next change. The flowers that come, the snow that comes, all the things in this valley. The people are also about change. The people who come here often are in transition from one thing to another. Most people don't come here. No one comes here to live here forever. Some people call me a lifer, but I won't be forever here. The miners came here, and they probably thought they might have had a lifetime here, but then that changed suddenly. And then it became a retreat center, and that has changed over the years, from leadership to responding to our culture in different ways. And it's about creative worship, and creativity is about change and newness, new ideas. Our life is about worship, and this place is about creative worship. The change in this place is about its ministry, a ministry of renewal, which is change, moving from one state to another state. It's about welcoming and hospitality of people who come and people who return. It's, to its very fiber, this place is about change. It's not to say that your place isn't about change too. But life here in this village brings to us many, many opportunities to discern, to know what's next, to know what is best to do, to tend to it in its physicalness, how to tend to its people in helping them move from the place they came from to the place to which they will go. So we spend a lot of time here talking about change and where we're going and how we're going to know where to go to live a faithful life. We program our life here in such a way that we will learn about more faithful ways to live and learn how to do it. I tell people when I talk about Holden Village that we are a laboratory, that this is a place where we can practice different things. We can practice community. We can practice trying out new recipes. We can practice new fuel-saving ideas. We can practice any number of things, but this place is a laboratory. So how do we know where to turn and how to turn? And that's what discernment is about. There are some basic things about discernment, and that's an openness to the Spirit. And that's the hard part, I think. I think we don't know how to talk about this. We let alone do it. We live in a culture where we are taught how to set goals, to manage our time, to make decisions in an orderly, reasoned way. We're not taught to allow the Spirit into who we are. At least I wasn't. I'm lucky because I'm an introvert, so it comes to me a little more naturally. In this place of Holden Village, one of the ways we practice about an openness to Spirit is just getting here. It takes a lot of effort to get here, and once you get here, I see people get off the bus every day, and I see this, like, oh, I'm here. They look up, and they see Martin's Ridge, or they see Dumbbell Mountain, and they're filled. Take a deep breath. In a sense, that's an openness right there, a little way of saying, I'm being open to what could happen to me in this place. And I made the effort to get here. Discernment's about simplicity of heart, meaning I just want to do what God's will is for me. I want to use my gifts in the best way that God wants me to use them. And so at Holden, life is slower, yes, although it's fast enough. For those of us who live here, sometimes we're not so sure it's slower, except for mail is only 3 days a week in the winter and there's no telephones. So that just makes it slower, and I'm very aware of that when I leave this village for several days and go down Lake. I was saying at lunch about email, that I've lived here 4 years now in a row, and that is a big thing that has changed in most of the people's lives who I knew previous to moving here. We don't have that, and so this past winter when I got word that my father was seriously ill and it was going to be 2 days before I could get out of here, I didn't panic. That was just the way it was. So I did what I needed to do to prepare myself to go out, to be by his bedside, to be with my family. But I did what I had to do here in the meantime. I didn't get on the phone. I didn't catch the next plane because I had to wait 2 days for the next boat. So necessarily, it's simpler in that way. Sometimes we might think it makes us more complicated. This is a place, too, where we can be open to the counsel of others. Others are here for similar reasons that we are here for. They're open to listening to us. They're open to learn about the call in their lives, the vocation that they are seeking. A woman just left us yesterday who'd been here for 9 months, and the thing she learned was that she was homesick, and she wanted to go home, and she had a community back there. When she left 9 months ago, she didn't think she had much of a community or a place. She learned and listened to herself, and as she talked to other people in worship and in conversation at the tables and at her 12-step meeting, she learned that she had home, she had a place. She was listening, and it took her those many months. Many people who come to this place and live here for several weeks or months sense a different call to service, and they may, I don't know how many letters of recommendation I've written recently for people who live here now who are wanting to go into the Lutheran Volunteer Corps or some other service-oriented Peace Corps, something like that. So there's time for people to listen to those calls and to call those out in one another. I always tell people that you're going to hear your call from somebody else, so you better be listening to your friends. That we need to do that for one another. And in this place, we take time to do that. We can take time. We're not distracted by TVs and some of those sorts of things. We do some formal discernment here at Holden. Those things are more informal that I was talking about. But there are some ways that we do formally establish discernment processes. And I'd like to share a little bit about those. A couple of years ago, we established the opportunity for people to gather others around them. They just needed to ask. I need people to help me know where I should go. Okay, who do you want to sit with you? We'll commit to a weekly meeting for 10 weeks or however long. And we went through a biblical study together, conversation, sharing feedback with a person from what we knew of them in this community and how they lived. We get to know things about people's lives here and their habits that we can share with them that they might be best in certain places or not in others. There's always the one-on-one kind of listening friends. But many people who come to Holden to live here a little bit longer seek to stay a little bit even longer still. And we set up a process by which we ask people to think about, is this a good thing for you? And it has to do with a written tool we offer them. We call it a discernment tool and ask them a number of questions about what is it that you're seeking, what are the advantages, what are you not complete with, asking them to think and write. If people want to stay even a third year, that would be for a second year extension, and if they want to stay even longer, we ask them to gather some people around them for conversation. And in that process, we start just as we did today. We start with silence so that we can come to this space, we can focus on the person, we can allow us, the Spirit, to kind of come into us and make ourselves available to that person and with that person.
Janet, do you do that? And is it done in such a way that it's a mutual decision, or is it solely up to the person in specific dealing with staying on at home?
I mean the final outcome of the decision. We do it mutually. Mm-hmm. I'll give an example. There's a young man who is in the process right now. In fact, nearing the end of his process, I think he's made a final determination of how we should go. But he's lived here 2 years, and he's thinking about a third. And came to the group, had written out the piece of written work, came to the group, and the people that are part of the group are some of our are assigned by role. And some are assigned by invitation. by that person. And we come together and we talk, and he has used this group to ask him questions that they have for him. And we kind of mutually come to an idea of which way it should go. But in the end, with him, he's still waffling. He's not sure for himself yet. So we've given him input, made ourselves more available. I'm part of the group, that's why I say we. Made ourselves available for non-group time, for individual time. And we feel good about saying to him, this is what we would like you to consider. We feel good about you staying. We think it would be good for the community, good for the village, but it needs to be good for you, and you need to make come to that final piece about that. So it's in his hands finally there, but not without a lot of input. He knew how to use that group. He didn't come to the group with a decision. I want to stay, what do you think? He didn't say that. He says, I'm thinking about staying on. And he was truly open to the Holy Spirit working through the rest of us to him. Most people have a hard time doing that. And he's a very wise young man. I'm proud of him. And I think he's going to leave this place not only with skills that he's learned from a job that he's been part of, but skills of openness to God's will in his life. So that's a long answer to a short question. I guess, and you helped me make some of the other points I wanted to make. It's awkward. It's hard. You know, we sit in a room quietly together, just like it was maybe a little awkward for us, and it certainly was awkward right afterwards. You know, nobody wanted to say anything because, well, gee. You know, I kept thinking about things like, oh, gee, I forgot to take, you know, this out of my suitcase and, you know, whatever. Things that we don't think are very spiritual or, you know, but that's just kind of part of who we are. And we just have to let that flow over us and past us. Had a friend who used to always tell about if when he was trying to do centering prayer, he always imagined, he was a swimmer, and he imagined that he was sitting in the bottom of a pool, and that anything that came into his mind that was distracting, he just let it be a little bubble and let it float up and away. And he could imagine that he could exist there and just let the bubbles float away. Or wash over you is another image that some people use. It's an awkward thing also for someone to say, I need others to help me. We think we need to be able to do that ourselves. And we think, I've been taught in all the career planning sessions I've been to in my life, which are a lot, you make a list and you put the pros and the cons and you check it off. So it's not a reasoned sort of thing, and I feel like I've been taught to be more reasoned than this sort of concept of discernment leads us towards. Let me read something here for you. There are, as I was saying, several things that we can, and in a chapter, Frank is here. I don't know how many of you have met Frank. He is the author of this, of the article, the chapter on discernment in the book. And I know several of you have read it because I've seen you reading it. So he's here to kind of answer, help us talk too together about this topic and answer questions, especially that if you had that came specifically from that text. I guess I just want to say that at Holden we do practice discernment, and it's very difficult for us even here in a place where it seems like the kind of major factors that are needed, like openness to the Spirit, like a simplicity of life and openness to being available to God's will. There are lots of things here that lead us towards it, but it's an awkward thing because we don't know how to do it. But we try, And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And Anne?
In this setting, have you learned things about people that are, types of people are especially good to gather around you, or is it a variety? Is it more the way people come to it?
Or the way people come to the process of discernment?
Yeah, so like if we're not here and we're thinking of who would I want to involve in my decision making? Is it more the way people come to it, or are there some people who are especially good at helping others? Mm-hmm.
That, well, certainly, I think that's true. People who have I would be attracted to and would encourage someone who came to me and said, who should I ask to be on my discernment group? To seek out people who have a prayer life that is deep and disciplined and open. I also would tell people to seek out people with whom they have had conversations. People that know them a little bit, know something about them, can help them know the right questions to look at, not to provide them with the answers at all. But people who are predisposed towards going in and coming back out again. Introverts. I don't know, Frank, you can please jump in here with the others. What other comments or questions do people have? Dorothy.
Is there any bindingness to this discernment?
Any what?
Any binding quality? This look, the individual at the end? For instance, you know, the Quakers have a tradition of discernment groups for couples who will be married in that meeting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think you present yourself not to the pastor, to the meeting, first of all, and say, you wish to be married. And They have a
discernment meeting. Process.
Yes. Yeah. And theoretically, they can say, we don't think you're well suited. Mm-hmm. But I talk to people, nowadays it's very hard to say that to anyone, right? It's very
Absolutely.
Hard to say that.
Yeah.
And so I talk to people who've said, oh, we should have told them not to. Mm-hmm. You know, we knew it, but we just didn't know. And even for the human process, so how do you deal with those rough spots? Or, when the community's, when the group's discernment is kind of a little different from how the individual in question is discerning.
Very awkwardly. That's difficult because I've said that very thing to a couple who was here, and I said, I don't think this is right.
Uh-huh.
They got married a couple weeks ago. So when it comes right down to it, we really are a culture and come from and go back to a culture where we're very individual. And so many people, well, it will be their decision in the end, or they may agree, or but they want it to be their decision. So that's hard. And binding, I suppose, you know, one of the difficulties about being a director at Holden Village is because we are a community and we also are a town, and we are a worshiping mm-hmm. community. And you want to use this sort of model where we can allow the Spirit to work through us. But sometimes decisions just have to get made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes the hydro just has to get repaired. Those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination. And what is leadership? It's a question in the context of discernment. How does that fit in a place like this, or in a congregation, or in your family? What is leadership? I think leadership has to do with saying to that couple, I don't know if this is right. I think that's leadership. Yeah.
I have kind of a practical question. Is there, do you have a model for this? I mean, do you have something written down? Is there something mm-hmm. written down?
Yeah. I mean, the process that people use for Holden Village, yes. There's a number of things written about, there's not a lot written. Have you found a lot written about discernment?
A few things here and there, but no, not a ton. We won't find a section in Borders bookstore.
No.
going to go to a great big huge bookstore, which I resist because I like small bookstores. I'm going to see if I can find stuff. Like, where do you go? So there's not a lot written. But every once in a while, you know, like the things I have are like a church newsletter that somebody wrote, you know, five conditions for individual spiritual discernment. You know, these are the kinds of things I cherish. I grab and I stick in my file and keep.
Well, is this something that you would share?
No, it's mine. Yes,
well, you probably don't have a copying machine.
Yeah. As we have copying machines at home.
Oh, you do.
Just a monk who prints them.
No, I'd be glad to share these sorts of things.
And maybe, well, I was just thinking about it in my conversation. You know, it sounds like a wonderful thing.
Well, and there's a couple of pieces here. One is an article that I have that I was sharing with Frank this morning. It's called Passing Angels, the Arts of Spiritual Discernment. It's just an article that came out of Weavings magazine. Actually, it's 3 years old. So it's that kind of isolated sort of thing that you'll find. There's, like you say, there's not a section of borders on it.
There's a tradition in the Roman Catholic Church that through spiritual direction, that is a great tool. It's not a community. Well, I mean, if you're living in a religious community, as in religious life in the Catholic Church, you would have a community around you, but there's also, you know, the tradition in religious communities of having a spiritual director, which is something that is coming more and more into. You know, people more and more, Protestants as well as Catholics, are seeking out spiritual directors to help them, you know, in their discernment process, or even in just discerning, you know, God in their life on a day-to-day basis, and the will of God for them on a day-to-day basis. So there are, you know, that's where there is one source of, you know, information for people. Retreat centers, Roman Catholic retreat centers, always have spiritual directors. There are, you know, some other people not affiliated with a religious community, more and more, who are doing, some pastors, some lay people, too. I mean, you know, it's not a community spiritual direction or a spiritual formation or spiritual discernment, but it's certainly something that's valuable to people.
Dorothy mentioned the Quakers, and I think most of the things that processes I use come from looking at facilitators' guides from the Quaker community, and looking at how to run a meeting, trying to be open to the spirit. It's the Catholic community and the Quaker community that I think from which we get our greatest resources in the context of discernment.
You know, there are a few books, though, on discernment that might be very, very helpful to some folks. One is by Thomas Green, and I think it's called Weeds Among the Wheat. And he's a Jesuit, and the Jesuit tradition within the Catholic Church is a primary place that it developed both individual and communal practices of discernment. But that is one thing. And also Parker Palmer has an article on steering clearness committees, which describes the process, you know, the Quaker process of helping a person or a couple engage through a decision. And I might have some of those up in my room. I could put together, you know, a few things and maybe leave them someplace. If that's,
I think the ones you mentioned are listed in the bibliography in the back of the book.
I thought we had that.
Weeds Among the Wheat is one.
Yes.
The Parker Palmer one is a really good one that I lost, and I want to find it again.
I definitely have
that mentioned.
I think one of the things, too, and for me, is really developing our life of prayer. Because we make ourselves more available to this, to what we practice. That's what it is. If we pray, we're practicing for the times when we need that skill, and whether it's a change in our life and we need some discernment about it, or or change that's kind of foisted on us, and we have to make a discernment. One of the little resources that I have here, and it looks like something you find up at Ginny's Corner, but it's clearly something you can use with young children, but it's clearly meant for all of us. The Lynn family, Dennis Lynn, Sheila Fabricant Lynn, and Matthew Lynn, two brothers who are married to the third person. One of them, I mean, they're not. You know what I mean. They are brothers and a wife and a sister-in-law, she is. And they take the examen, which is the practice of examining your life daily, and put it down into a form that is manageable for people like me, who leads a pretty busy life and don't always find time. But here's the questions that they say. Take 20 minutes every day. At the end of the day, light a candle if you don't live at Holden Village. quiet yourself and ask yourself this question. For what moment today am I most grateful? And then ask yourself this question. For what moment today am I least grateful? And if you've got someone else there, then to speak with them about what comes to mind from your day. And if not, you could write it or just pray about it or think about it. But simple questions and the discipline of that daily helps you learn about your own rhythms, the things that are important in your life, the things that you value, so that you, when you come to a discernment time, you might see a pattern, and that these simple questions can also be changed, altered, and they make these suggestions. When did I give and receive the most love today? When did I give and receive the least love today? When did I feel most alive today? When did I most feel life draining out of me today? When today did I have the greatest sense of belonging to myself, others, God, and the universe? When did I have the least sense of belonging? When was I happiest? When was I saddest? What was today's high point? What was today's low point? The idea is two simple questions that it's the desolation and the consolation that you're getting at through those, that you develop the rhythm in your daily life doing that, that leads you to a sense of being able to know some things about yourself, more clearly about yourself. Discernment is about the foundational identity. It is about who we know ourselves ultimately to be. It's a values clarification exercise. I come from the 70s. So, but this book is in the store. I just went over before the session and looked, and she's got lots of them. And she's also got another book over there by these three that's also very good about images of God.
What is the name of that?
It's called Sleeping with Bread.
Sleeping with
Bread.
Bread.
Oh, it does make sense.
The first sentence of the book.
Tell the story. Do you know the story?
The story was, if I recall, children during the Second World War who were separated from their parents and kept all together somehow, like moved out of the cities or something, separated from their parents in England during the war, had a terrible time sleeping and falling to sleep at night. And they found that if they were given just a piece of bread to take with them to bed, that helped them to sleep. It was like that surety. They weren't as anxious for tomorrow or even for the sleep. Now, maybe you remember more about it.
That's right.
And, you know, what a way to go to bed at night after doing the exam.
The question they say, or the statement they say here, is that reminded them that today I ate and I will eat again tomorrow. Some security. It's like a child's blanket, teddy bear, wind up the toys next to his bed.
I do that with my son now. He doesn't want to go to bed at night, so I'll give him a piece of bread.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the first thing he says when I go to put him to bed, I'm hungry.
And then he goes to bed.
Wow. That's amazing. I've tried to say it.
There, I had a counselor one time who was one of my career counselors along the way, and she, you know, we went through all these processes, and she's a really wonderful woman who's wife of a Lutheran pastor, and so very deep faith life, and wise woman, one of those mentors I got when I was in my 20s, you know. And, you know, we went through all these processes, and then finally, ultimately she says, well, you have to do your homework, and then you have to wait. So when you do ultimately have a decision or a change that's coming, you need to prepare, but then you need to wait. And the waiting is what she meant. You make yourself available for the answer. I didn't get to bring along another book that I have that I'm pretty sure is in the store called Transitions by William Bridges, which I think is a great name. Really lucked out with that. And he's, but he talks about, his subtitle is Making Sense of the Changes in Life. And he has a simple model that talks about, there are three steps when we make changes in life or have a discernment process about how we want to go. One is, the first step is an ending, that we confront an ending somehow. Either it comes to us suddenly or it's impending or we need to make it. And the second step, he calls it the neutral zone. I don't like that title, I'll tell you why in a second. And the third is the new beginning. My preferred title for the second is a fallow time. I grew up on a farm, so that means a lot to me. But it was a time, it's a time where you let things rest. He also likens it to crossing the street, or I've heard the trapeze sort of thing too. But you have been one place, you see another place you want to be, or you're going to be. You have to go across, you have to follow it. You don't dilly-dally, you don't stand around. You do it in a safe and planful way, but you do it. You don't avoid it. And so you have to go into the fallow time before you have a new beginning. During that fallow time, there are things you can do, like pray and think about options and possibilities. You can write, you can talk with other people. But there's a time there when you wait and you make yourself available for the next, the new beginning. And that's what I think discernment's about, is that fallow time, that we take time for it. A friend that just left the village, he left his work in the Midwest a couple years ago and thought that he would really get started up again when he moved to Seattle, and it's taken him a good 9 months, and he still isn't really established, but he's taken some fallow time, and he's allowing it to be, and he's getting impatient, but he's allowing that fallow time to be. That's been important for him.
It's the same as a sabbatical. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything, but you change what you've been doing. And nature does this, but most people aren't aware of that. That it must rest a year. Animals do this, not tame animals, but wild animals don't eat every day. You know, it's like a sabbatical the seventh day. And we should learn from that. And the earth is the same way, so you don't have a crop every single year. They have rest time. Mm-hmm. That's right. But it occurs in nature as well. Yeah. And really what a sabbatical is.
Take a rest.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So, your experience here, what about situations when you have to make a decision because something's available you've always thought you wanted?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You have to decide in a short time. And I'm sure that happens with people who are leaving here and suddenly they have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Are there elements of discernment that you found that are helpful in those situations?
Well, again, I take a mini fallow time in those, personally. I very seldom make a decision right there, if I can get away with it. Say, okay, let's sit till tomorrow. I think this is the way we're going to go, but let's sit with it for a while. That mean, I like to create many fellowships somehow, or even to say, I'm going to walk around the building, and I'll come back in half an hour, and that's what I mean. So that's something that helps. And there certainly are decisions with people and with things that we can do that way. There, you know, of course, we all have faced things where, I mean, make some of your emergency room nurses or doctors or something, and I can't figure out how those people do that sort of stuff. I need time.
They're extroverts.
Maybe that's it. Are there any extroverts here?
No.
Yeah, how do extroverts do it? How do you deal with that?
I used to just love that crisis thing, and I was really good at it. And they like it. They get all pumped up. They're pumped up all the time, and I can make a decision very quickly. And although I'm not sure. But I do this discernment, too. I also do that.
And as an extrovert, I think I do it as I'm talking. I hear myself sort of very often.
So you're listening.
When you can't make a decision, you just say, you know, I need to think about that for a minute. I'll call you back. Or, you know, you get back from a moment.
I have a question or a comment. In some cases, I think discernment is more difficult in a church setting because we have... we're somewhat constrained by kindness, or we let go of our common sense or assessment tools because we think we have to be the church, quote unquote. And this question comes out of career guidance with parishioners, for example, or sitting on a candidacy committee for pastors in the Lutheran Church. And so I'd like to hear your,
anybody else
call?
I agree totally. I think it's the same thing Dorothy was talking about, is it's really hard to tell someone that we think this is a mistake, that you've fallen in love with a mistake. and certainly we are just like a congregation at Holden in that sense. You know, many times people will say here about regarding these discernment groups, well, why do we even do it? They always stay. And of course, being a process-oriented person, I always say, because the process is important, it's the journey that's important.
But has Holden asked someone or told someone, we do think you would be better to leave?
We have.
You have.
And did they leave?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's sometimes when that's not been mutually agreed upon. And there are times when it does. And that again, for the fallow time comes in. And sometimes I think, well, are we just hedging our bets here? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they'll come around to this decision, but sometimes you just have to wait for all the pieces to come together. So it happens both ways. But and sometimes when asking people to leave, that's not the right language. The better language would be agreed that someone will leave, mutually agreed, I guess. But we have also asked people to leave.
Okay, I was going to say, if you're not willing to say it, you know, I wonder what discernment means then, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other people want to respond to that comment about, or go ahead.
You were talking about leadership before, and it made me think of the Rule of Benedict, which is interesting in that the abbot is given an incredible amount of authority and control within the community. But when it talks about decision-making as a community, the abbot's first call upon to listen, gather the community together and listen, and specifically told to listen to the youngest in the community, mm-hmm. because they're least likely to be heard. And then after all that input comes, a decision has to be made, and everybody has to to live with it. So the app still has an incredible amount of control, which... When I spent some time in Benedictine communities initially, that just made my skin crawl, but I've seen the wisdom in that. It seems to function pretty well. But it's not purely vested in that person. There's that communal involvement, that discernment process.
There's responsibility that you as a community member then need to make your voice clearly heard, too.
It's also a commitment in the whole community that after we do this, that we will live together with the decision that's made. Which gets back, I think, to the one of the points that's made in the chapter, that our focus and our direction needs to be on the Spirit of God at work among us, that's beyond ourselves. So we focus on our own needs and desires that have supported.
Yep.
And I think that's probably the hardest part.
Yeah. Have you found that level of maturity or whatever to hold fast when the decision is made, when there's a decision that's not mutually you enter into the process both agreeing that this is what you want to do, and then, you know, I can just imagine hurt feelings or whatever. Have you found that, is there a process that you use to hold that, or is that just sort of something that if it doesn't happen, if it doesn't work, that the person on the other end feels like, well, okay, I agreed, you know, this was a discerning, I agreed to this process, you know what I mean?
Well, a little history here. We moved into this sort of process because of that very sort of thing. We developed a process because someone was hurt. And we found a way for them, for their voice to be heard after the hurt. And they made some good points saying, I need my community gathered around me. How can we do that? And then that's when we developed a system, the process that we have now. And, you know, it's malleable. So yeah, feelings do get hurt, and can I answer your question though? Say your question again.
Oh, just if there was a process that you used after that, if it just kind of went
repeal
process, agreed, you know?
Yeah, there is a process. There are processes where people can come forward and speak and voice, you know, they're hurt, and we do that actually when this community is smaller in the winter. That will happen at prayer around the cross. On Thursday nights in the summertime, we have prayer around the cross in the village center, and it's the big cross that's up on the wall is laid down on the platform, and there's candles, and people come forward and they can pray at the cross and light a candle. Sometimes it's a healing service, and others come forward and lay hands on or make the sign of the cross with oil. In the wintertime, it's done right here in this space, and the cross is right here, and it's dark and it's intimate, and that's a place where that happens. Also, people can confront one another face to face, and they also don't. This place is not perfect, everybody. Everybody thinks it's paradise, and it's not. It's a little piece of paradise, but it's not paradise. I always tell people, everybody brings their own, all brokennesses of the world right here. This isn't separate. We're not separate. So, but the good thing about it is we do try to practice. You want to discuss something?
Well, I just had a couple ideas bubbling, and I want to jump in. Is that all right?
Go for it.
Well, A couple of things that I've been thinking about. I think a lot about discernment these days now since this chapter. And the whole reason we have a practice of discernment is because it's not easy. That we find ourselves in these decisions that are just so difficult, and we feel pulled in different directions, or we're just not sure what to do, whether about a person should stay in a community, or which job should I take, or Justin and I were considering moving to another house and just agonized over that. I mean, it's just amazing how many times we find ourselves in the midst of decisions that that we're pulled in different directions, and we need some way of engaging that. And so we have this process. But the thing that I have come to believe about discernment is that discernment is not about finding the right decision. It's not about finding that decision that's going to get me through all this. It's only that secondarily. But primarily, it's about a way of living. It's a way of attending to in any of the things that come to us, thinking about in what way does my faith direct me in the midst of this decision, and also a process that helps me always be attentive to the pullings that I find within me as I am trying to engage in anything that comes across in my life. And the thing that is most striking to me is how emotional this particular process is. And I think it's our emotions that are the key. For Ignatius, who was the person in the Catholic Church who developed the premier model, it was all about emotions. It was all about when you find yourself in any of these situations that we've named, thinking about what are the things that you are, what are the things that pull you in one direction emotionally. I am really drawn to moving to this house for this reason, and I really repel the idea for these reasons. And those repulsions and attractions are really kind of the key. And to try to take those and really live with them deeply in prayer and say, now what is that all about? Am I really attracted to this because of that promise of new life, or am I attracted to that because there's something I'm avoiding, like the Dickens over here, and this will give you a good escape for that? And really being that precise and diligent process of self-examination and exploration about always looking at the things that I'm attracted to and repulsed by as a community or as an individual, and then taking those and really living with them deeply, I think that's the heartbeat of this. And to cultivate a way of life that is always looking at those different attractions and repulsions, and trying to understand which dimensions of those are rooted in those stirrings for new life, and which of them are rooted in our own neuroses and prejudices and escapes and defenses. And that way of being, that way of reflecting, that continual prayerful process of exploring those, I think is what discernment is all about. And that gives rise to guidance and decisions. But we might make a decision that we regret. But if we're always involved in that process, we will attend to that also. We would see, wait a minute, this really doesn't feel right. Why is that? Let's continue this process. Why do I feel like this person does not belong here? Is that about me or is that about them? And really exploring that. And I think that emotions there are really...
The model for that is in being a people of faith. A couple weeks ago, Christian Sheeran was on teaching staff, and he did a theme vespers. And the question he asked us, it was about baptism. You know, what is it that we have to die to? What is it that we have to leave behind and move toward? And it's a constant daily question. And that's why the examen.
And this the book?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, a very simple, easy to follow, and yet very deep process that we can each do, you know, really. And then talk to some. They gather around, then the three of them who live together, and then talk, and then share what, you know, what was the most joyful or the most painful or whatever, the several different ways of looking at this, what most attracted me and what most repulsed me, mm-hmm.
yep.
You know, joy and sorrow or happy and sadness, And if you could do that and discuss it with somebody you live with or a friend or somebody, it's a daily discernment, really.
Mm-hmm. That's right. When am I most at peace? When am I most disturbed and uncentered? Feel off kilter. Yeah. Affiliations are okay. And then to invite to do that with people who themselves are willing to do that same kind of exploration, you know, the guidance that they might give to you, that they're reflective about. Why do they feel pulled for me to make that decision? Why are they attracted for me to make that way? Is that about their honest seeing of my gifts or seeing of my blind spots? Or is that because of something within them and being open and willing prayerfully to do that hard, hard work? I mean, that's I think, what makes it work. I mean, that's the key. That's the challenge.
I think we're about at an hour, and if people want to continue to visit, I'm glad to stick around. I'm sure Frank would too. But let me just close with a sentence or two from the chapter. In the end, spiritual discernment depends on faith. We do our best within the forms we have, but we ever depend on the mysterious emergence of the Spirit, who resonates and persuades and always comes as a gift. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
That's part of the continuing conversation.
Thanks.